This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music.
Oh, look.
Oh,
Michael Baker's here.
Black Crowes. Oh, wait, but whoa, wait a minute. Okay, there's a drummer here. Like...
How you doing, Michael?
What's going on?
Mike Baker.
That's not him.
That'd be cool. Fall of Envy, yes. Well, here's the singer of Fall of Envy.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good, Baker.
Yeah.
You know, I've called you so many names, Mike, Michael, Baker. I guess it all depends, right?
It doesn't matter. Here, let you me know, see here.
We're waiting for Tommy. He's the guitarist. Let me give you a little backstory while we wait for Tommy to get here. So the story of Fall of Envy and me goes back to 2008 when MySpace was the thing. And I had just started doing interviews with Chris, who now runs the label that FOE is on. He's like, you got to start doing interviews. And so I was doing some. You know, my first interview ever, Dean, was Bill Levy of Firehouse. That's the first one I ever did. You want to talk about nerve wracking? That's all because I worked with his sister-in-law. And she's like, oh, he'll do it with you. And I went, ugh. Well, I started to get better. And I was on MySpace one day and I saw them doing Fix Yourself. I think there was a CM44 in Orlando was doing a TV promo and it came up on a commercial. And I went, yeah, that sounds really good. Let me reach out to them. And their bass player at the time, Brent, got back to me. He's like, yeah, we'll do it. He goes, we're doing a show at the Social in Orlando if you want to go. And I go. And Mike can attest to this. The band was having a bad day, just a bad day. And so here's this guy coming backstage to interview them. And I could tell in their face, like, oh, you're going to be quick or what? Get it over with. Well, it turns out I stuck to, you know, being me and asking interviews. And all of a sudden, they all warmed up and it turned into be a fantastic interview. And I wound up becoming friends with them. Going to their shows and been on some of the recordings. Like I was there when they did the Dido White Flag. They were laying that down. And if anybody hasn't heard that cover, do yourself a favor. Look up Fall of Envy White Flag because it'll blow. Have you? You haven't heard it, Dean, have you?
Nah.
While we're waiting for Tommy, let's do that real quick. So the funny story with this is we were – Chris and I were at the House of Blues watching them and they decided to do a cover. They don't tell anybody like what it is and we're kind of standing there like, oh, this is a new song. I wonder what this is. And we're listening. And then they get to the chorus and you're like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. It's one of those. So I want you to play it and I want you to hear their version. I want everyone to hear the version of White Flag by Dido. And then they took it into the studio, and I was there when they were laying down guitars and stuff. It was so cool. So let's do this.
Well, I'll tell you right now, there's already a high probability I'm going to dig it. Because I wasn't a fan of the song, but I like the way it's written. Good bones.
Yes. Hey, Clarissa. Oh, she basically said, have a great show tonight. It's her bedtime.
Thanks, Reese.
I can't get those Orlando Mendez lyrics out of my head. So, yes. But thank you, Ressie. All right, so let's get into White Flag here while Mike's getting set up and we're waiting for Tommy. Let me share my screen here. This cover is truly unique and it's nothing like the original. And that's what makes it so great. This again is Dido's White Flag rocked out version. And just imagine you're at the House of Blues and you have no idea. They didn't announce what the song was. They just start playing it. You're kind of looking around like a cat looking at a laser on the wall. Like, I know I've heard this before. And then this happens. So here we go. Let me do this. Hold on. It kicked out. Pulling up Howard Stern now. Hold on a second. Ooh. Here it is. All right. So here we go. This is White flag, everybody. Here we go. Play a little bit of this. That is nothing like the original. I see Tommy is here now. Welcome, Tom. Whoop. Can't get you off mute, Tommy. Oh, there you are. How you doing?
What's up? Hey, Don. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, man. So, yeah, I was just telling everybody that, you know, I met you guys, and then that was one of those moments where we're standing at the House of Blues and you start playing that. We're kind of looking around and you hit the
chorus. That kicks ass.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't even know if I know the original version, like the Dido version. I don't even know if I heard it.
That's the way the song's supposed to sound in my head. Some people hate me when I say this. I wasn't a fan of the original. I thought it had the right bones to it, good hook. There's just something about the way it's produced I didn't like, but that was it.
Thank you.
Yeah. You guys knocked it out of the park with that one. I'll never forget it. But you also had original music. Tons of, and that was what gravitated.
No, we're just a cover band.
Yep, Britney Spears cover band.
Yes. So again, as introduction, Michael Baker is the lead vocalist. Tremendous vocal still. You'll hear it when we feature the new song that they just released. Yes, they put out a new song, and his vocals are as strong as ever. We're going to get into that. Thank you. Then Tommy, who writes, he's the lead guitarist. Comes up with these killer riffs too, and we're just happy to have you, Tommy. Uh-oh. Can you hear me, Tommy? Are
you on mute? Yeah, I can hear something funky in the background now.
Something funky.
I hear that too.
Cookie, cookie.
Good rhythm to it, though. I like it.
Yeah. So go. We'd like to hear you play "Hit Me, Baby" one more time. There you go.
I got a metal version of that I've recorded.
Wayne did that.
I do, yeah.
That's awesome. So again, they're here now. The last time we had you on before, we featured a lot of your songs. But I went back and I listened to the interview again. There were songs I didn't get to talk about. So what I want to do is talk about those songs before we get to the new release to kind of set people up, and that, because then we get some cool backstories on those, if you don't mind. Do you mind?
No.
No. If we can remember what the hell we thought of when we were writing.
We were on a bender. No.
It's a memory test.
42. Yeah. Well, the first one I wanted to feature was Fix Myself. That we didn't talk about that last time. And this song is one of those that, in fact, I love when I get to play songs, maybe they haven't heard it before. There's a note I think Grizz put in here for that. I want to get to the 150 mark. So that's what we're going to do here. We're going to jump ahead to 150 in the song, and then we can talk about it. See, that's what we do here. Yeah, man. So
all about timestamps here.
That's all about timestamps. And we're going to do that right now. So I hit mute. We're going to hit the audio button here. And now, yes, I do play-by-play on what I'm doing so people know I'm not goofing around. So, where did it go? All right, so I want to get to Fix Myself. Here it is. All right. Here we go. And I said it was 150. Okay, here we go. I'm gonna skip ahead to 150. Hopefully there's no commercial. And it's coming out of this here. What we wanted to call out was that note that Baker held there. And then coming out of this little bridge instrumental, the way it kicks back in again. That's how you rock out, everybody. That is Fix Myself. Bring back any memories, guys?
Yeah. It's been a while since I've heard that. Makes me remember a lot of stuff that back in the studio and like that whole middle section of how it's funny, during the vocals, which the female vocalist, when she was doing all of that stuff, the little kind of muted / distorted talking that's in the background, that was actually me in the vocal booth talking to the engineer, producer, Justin Thomas, and I was telling him the vibe and everything that I was going for, and he still had it recording. And he literally just took that, basically reversed it, like Missy Elliott. He reversed it and just put some distorted effects and stuff. And that's just me. That's all that is in the background, is me telling him what vibe was I was trying to go for and to try to achieve that. So it's kind of funny, like, hearing those types of things.
That is wild. Tommy, you're on mute. You're on mute, Tom.
Tommy.
Rookie mistake. That's actually that's my favorite part of the song. I kid you not. Because I was in
the talking part?
Yeah. I was in the control room when Mike was, talking to the engineer, Justin. And Justin was laughing, like, he's like, watch, I'm gonna capture this and we're gonna do something with it. We're just crying laughing. Baker had no idea. He's in the vocal booth. And he was like, all right, hey, take five, come in, check it out. And Mike had no idea that was even being recorded. So we just decided, let's roll with it. Let's do something different. Get experimental.
Oh, that's wild.
So,
wow.
So a funny story about those types of things in the studio. Going back to White Flag that we did, when we were in recording White Flag, when I was in the vocal booth, I started messing with the guys in the engineering room. And I've had this trick ever since in high school, and I don't think it would come through on podcast, but I have a way of making it sound like, remember when you had a Walkman on back in the day and you could kind of hear the muffled like drum beat and everything? I can do that. And so I was doing that in the vocal booth, and it was driving them nuts because they thought like music was playing somewhere on the console. And ended up, they were like, oh, that's you? And I started laughing. And I was just doing the beat that was part of White Flag that we used. And so if you listen back to the very beginning of White Flag, that's me doing this little little beat with my mouth that sounds like a walk. That's all that is.
No kidding.
That's cool. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
He's a man of many talents.
Tommy, you didn't know you had a human beatbox in your band.
Yeah.
Look at that. Well, Fix Myself as a Memory for me. If you remember, we had this idea to do an acoustic show with Fall of Envy. I remember we came to the guys and we went, hey, can we do an acoustic show with you? And they're kind of like, how are we going to acoustic our songs? Right? I remember that was like the first thing. Like, is that really going to translate? Yeah. And it was, what's that, Insomniacs? No, what was the name of that club in Orlando? That Tanqueray's? Tanqueray's, right?
Tanqueray's, yeah.
Yeah.
And they did it. They went down and Fix Myself was the first song that night they did acoustically. And it sounded amazing. I remember that.
Yeah, that was, for us, that was really different, right? We had never done like a true unplugged. And
right.
Just truthfully, I was pissing my pants. Like I was like, I don't know how this is going to translate, but we'll give it a go. And it, I think it went over pretty well.
That's Chris and I's fault. We came up with the idea.
It was fun though, because it gave us a chance to do something that we only did that one time. We've never done again. And it was to play some stuff unplugged, but also to kind of talk about the backstories of the songs and kind of give like some insight of like, okay, what was the meaning behind this song? Some serious meaning, some that come out of jokes, but end up being a song that you think is a love song, but it's not, you know, it's stuff like that. And it gave us a chance to kind of just connect with the people that were there in a different way and just give this like insight to our little bubble of a world that we were living in and where we come up with inspiration for the songs.
You know,
it's like that Storytellers thing they used to have, right? Yeah. On VH1.
Yep.
Or was it?
Yeah. Storytellers. Well, that's a funny thing you said that, Chris, because they let me introduce them that night.
Mm.
So I'm standing up in front of the crowd that's there. And I said, you ever hear of VH1 Storytellers? They go, yeah, big crowd. I go, well, that's what this one's going to be like tonight. And that's what it turned into. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, what type of changes did you have to do to the songs to make them translate to acoustic? Did you like experiment with various open tunings for the acoustic guitars or?
We did. No? Yeah. So a lot of our stuff is already in like a drop open tuning to begin with, which is helpful, but you know, we had to get a lot more melodic with it, especially strum wise. You know, you don't have to, obviously the electric pickups like you do in an electric guitar. So you have to get a lot more inventive. It turned out to be a lot of fun, actually. Like it started off like, God, I don't know how we're going to pull this off. Like our stuff just doesn't translate acoustically. But then what we did, one thing we did was we pulled in a violin player.
Yes.
Our stuff, a lot of like texture. And that was cool. Once we started hearing the stuff he was doing, it automatically ignited something in, you know, with us to be like, oh, okay. All right, we're going to get a little more melodic. And it just kind of, I don't know, just helped us a lot more than just without having him there.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I totally, yeah. That's another thing that was really wild is when they brought that on and I was like, wow, that mixed so well.
I've got to see, is there a recording out there? I'd love to see that. So the violin player, was it like a lot of legato or did they like do like very quick staccato type stuff to add more rhythmic aspect to it?
All the above. Yep.
Sweet.
This guy was phenomenal. We had like two or three rehearsal sessions with him and he just got it. I you know, it was kind of disgusting. I was like, it took us years to like write these songs and this guy's like, oh yeah, here, just try this. But awesome. Yeah, he would.
Yeah, there's an audio recording of it, Dean, that we still have. Unfortunately, the only video recording that we have, Brandon, the drummer, chiming in. So the only video recording we had of that was put into a truck of our dear friend Jordan, who's since passed away, and he put it into his truck, and we continued to go out the rest of that night after the show was over. And somebody broke into his truck and stole the video camera with the videotape. So our only video of it gone forever. We're like, gosh, if we could only like put that poster up of like, keep the camera. Can we please just have, like, we won't file charges, but can we please get the video back? Cause it was some pretty special stuff that we didn't, we lost forever.
I did capture audio and I have some, like, fix myself. I still have, mainly cause I can listen to myself introduce you.
But it's all about Don.
No, seriously.
After the intro, it cuts off.
maybe I can post that because I did it for the Manchester radio that I was doing that. So yeah. I recorded the whole audio. It's not like through a soundboard. It's like through my iPod microphone, but it still turned out. So I still got it. You know what I'll do? I'll piece that together and share it with you guys because I still have the audio from it.
Sweet.
So let's do that. So let's get into failure. 105 is the part I want to call out here. Another fantastic song from this band. And so this is Failure. Let's sit back, take this in our little music den together. Here it is. I hope this doesn't buffer because this part right here, just like it's right here. God, that's gives me goosebumps every single time. Oh my God. I never get sick of that part. That little hesitation. That little hesitation there you guys have. Oh, so awesome.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, man, I haven't heard these in a while, but once again, I go back into thinking about what it was like being in the studio for that. And, I don't even know if I can remember what the original arrangement was, but what we showed up into the studio with, as far as arrangement for that song, once we got in the studio, got completely moved around. Once again, that was with Justin Thomas. He really felt that this song had a strong radio potential. And so he felt like the arrangement that we had was not conducive for radio. And so he really wanted us to put it more into, lack of better terms, a more formal format, so that we had a better chance of it hitting radio. And so it got completely, do you remember that, Tommy? We basically rewrote that song in the studio.
I do. You're 100% right. It's funny because you know, we did a lot of pre-production going into the studio and we thought like, all right, we feel pretty good. We'll just kind of bang these songs out and, you know, add some flavor to them. And then you get in the studio with somebody like Justin, who's a mad scientist. And he's just like, all right, hold on. No, let's do this. Let's try this. And we're like, holy crap, dude. Like, this is way
is this
different.
Costing us more money?
Like, I'm going to need another $50K wired to my account.
Do you remember what type of things that he changed up to make it more radio friendly? Are we talking about like just shortening it or changes with setting up the hook?
Both, actually. Some was the structure of the song. I think we had a tendency to drag out some of the outro stuff a little bit, like coming out of choruses where he was like, no, we need to tighten that up, which he was right. Like, honestly, we were so used to, you know, playing it a certain way. And as soon as he said it and we tried it, I'm like, ah, damn it, he's right. You know?
Well, that's stuff you can do when you're live, you know, like.
Which is exactly what we would do, actually, for that particular song live. The song would end, so to speak, and it would just kind of ring out. And then that main heavy chugging riff, we would just go back into that and just rock out for about a minute or so of just no singing, nothing. It was just straight music, just kind of just rocking out. And I would have a failed attempt of trying to play guitar, but it was so so distorted and nasty, nobody could hear my horrible guitar playing.
It wasn't plugged in anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's something I want to call out too, is anybody that's, I saw, like, there was a person in here, what was his name, Richard Chapman, who said it's one of my favorite songs of all time is Fix Myself, and that Michael was awesome singing that song live, and Good Times in Orlando. And that's what I want to talk about, is I don't think anyone understands that their live show, I think their energy on stage, I mean, everybody, you could tell they were feeling the songs. Mike, what is the microphone you use? It's a kick-ass microphone.
I don't know if I can remember the exact name of it, but it's a Shure microphone, and it's the old school, like, Elvis microphone, and there's a lot more artists that use it these days. And I remember when I first started using it, a lot of the audio engineers of the clubs would be like, oh, no, you can't use that. I'm like, dude, it's the same thing as the SM58. It's just the casing
design.
But it was kind of a signature thing for me, and I learned how to do things with that microphone without needing an effects pedal. I can make it sound like a megaphone. I can make it do certain things just because I understood the dynamics and the shape of it. And the only time it got a little scary, I'd get to swinging that mic around, and if that thing would have ever came off, it was basically just a 20-pound weight.
Projectile.
We should throw it out. Taking
out
my ability
and stress. Yeah, I've been at a few of your live shows. I could have been damaged, I guess. But it didn't matter the venue, too. It was like they were playing like the Social, which is a decent club. It holds about, 300 people, 200 people? You're playing the House of, more than that, 500?
Yeah, like probably
about 500.
500? Yeah. And then you'll play the House of Blues. And it'd be like two levels up, and you guys are playing, and it didn't matter. You guys just brought it every time. Appreciate that. Will you ever do a live show again? I know it's kind of hard logistically.
We've talked about it, and we would like to, for sure. Logistically, like you said, it's tricky. We're all scattered around the country.
Holograms of yourself.
Yeah, that's a
like the ABBA show they're doing in the UK. Have you heard about that?
No.
It's this huge arena that they've set up. It's ABBA, but it's all holograms.
Look at that.
Wow. It's supposed to be cool, but yeah.
You just tell Brant that you're going to do a show live and then not show up and just have holograms of yourself. It's a Brant show. There we go.
That's Brant.
Just anyone who knows, every time I met Brant, he goes, "I'm Brant Frenchman, the drummer." Every single time, he's the calling card.
Yeah.
All right. So, a few more songs before we get to the new one here. Yes, live show. FOE has been a big ass. Should have been a big ass band. Always felt like they were right on the verge. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, wait till you hear more. We've got more, like an infomercial.
Yeah.
So. We did not talk about Liar Skin last time. This song has a killer part in it too. It's the outro to this song that always hit me because it goes into a halftime, and we love halftime here.
Oh yeah,
we did. All right, so we're gonna get into some halftime action here. This is Liar Skin, right here. This, right here.
You know me.
that is Liar's Skin. I think it's going to bring up a point I want to make about vocals here. And that is Tommy. You're kind of an unsung hero there. You're like the Edge to Bono over here with your vocal. You harmonize really well with Michael in the background.
I appreciate that, man. Thanks. He's easy to harmonize to. What can I say?
Right. I think that's so important, though, like in a band where you compliment him so well. Because, you know, Mike's got this powerful, strong vocal, but you come in with that kind of like what Edge does with Bono. It's very similar. Like he can come in with that certain tone to compliment what he's doing. Is that something that you've always noticed, Mike? Like when you guys started writing together, you're like, oh, that's nice. The harmonies there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, one of the things for me is harmonies. Like I can't like think on the fly with harmonies. I'm one of those people that I like to sit down at a piano and, you know, and kind of figure out where I think everything should fit. Tommy's much better than he just has a natural ear. I mean, I don't know how many instruments he can play, but it's he can just pick up instruments and play them, but he's got his just a natural gifted ear where the harmonies just come automatically and he understands like where things should fit. And very rarely is there any type of correction to it. It's usually just, man, that sounds killer. Let's roll with it. And it gave me a chance to, on certain parts, to keep a little bit of that growl in certain parts. So because the harmonies came in and would help smooth that out, but it would help me keep that growl in there so it wouldn't lose intensity. It wouldn't lose the feeling and the emotion that we were trying to portray. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one thing about your band that was always key is those little harmonies that you get in there. They're subtle, but they're so good. Now, all those songs I played so far, I got one more. Poetic Rage was an album they put out. And then later on, a special edition came out. And on the special edition was those tracks. Well, Failure and Fix Myself were on the original. The Liar's Skin went on the special edition. And now Seize the Day, which is the next one. And, you know, the more I listen to it, now on the track listing, Solace comes after Seize the Day. But it's almost like Seize the Day is like a part two of Solace in a way, just because of the symbolism around it. Because Solace was just, there was so much, we don't have to get into, I'm just saying there's so much behind that song Solace. And then here comes Seize the Day, like right after. It was almost like a cherished life kind of thing.
You nailed it. It's exactly what it was. You know, I'll be completely honest. I would love to re-record that song. Truthfully, we kind of rushed through it. I'll take kind of the heat on that one because of, you know, the tragedy my family went through with my brother and all that.
Right.
I was so compelled. I just wanted to put something out there that, you know, I had to, like I was going to explode. And I kind of rushed everyone into the studio on that one. I think it came out fine, but every time I hear that song, just if I'm being candid, like I would love to remake it because it's not, doesn't quite sound like it did in my head, you know. Again, good song, but it could sound great.
Well, I think too. Tommy, one of the instruments that he can play is piano, in that song has piano in it. But one of the things that we pretty much had about 85% done was a pure broken down piano version of this song of Seize the Day. And it really brought a different emotion to it. It kind of helped you understand a little bit more of what the lyrics were about. So maybe that'll be something that we release one day. We just actually re-record it and give you two versions, the one that Tommy really wants, and then a piano version that's broken down that kind of just completely reframes the song in a different way.
You know, that's what I love about art, and like as creators of art, you're not afraid to, you know what, I could do that better or differently, right? You're like, I can make this better. Oh wait, I just want to put this up here. Re-record in honor of our brother. He would be so proud. Oh,
thanks, man.
Yeah. There you go. So, it is a great song, but you know, for you, Tommy, I won't play it.
No, that's okay.
You sure?
I'm not ashamed of it by any means. Oh. It's. I just know in my head it could sound a certain way that, and it didn't quite. I don't think we nailed it. Just in truth. And to anyone that loved that song, I appreciate it.
Right.
But I would love to hear it the way I initially heard it in my head.
Well, let's do this. Let me play a little bit of it, and then we can see what comes after. So I can get this, and then we'll hear what Tommy envisions later. I do like the idea of a piano version, too. It's going to be nice. So I'm hitting mute here. This is I have my skin still up. Sorry. So here is Seize the Day. Let's hope there's not a commercial. There isn't. Good. So that is Seize the Day, and I mentioned earlier that Solace is a song that came out before that, and if you really listen, you'll hear kind of continuation. Oh, look at this. Look at this from the TikTok group, Positive Rhyme. My favorite so far. Look at that, Tommy.
Tommy, what would you change? Like, I love the lead. I love the lead guitar part. What would you change?
You know,
is that one of the things you would change?
Definitely. I think, you know, the production quality for one was just meh in my mind compared to the other songs we've recorded before and after since. And it's not a slight on the producer or anything like that. It's just, again, I feel like we just kind of rushed through it. And again, I'd take the heat on that, but I'd love to have some time to really go in and just dedicate to that song. And you know, I can't really tell you right now like specific things I would change. I think the tempo is a little dragging for me, truthfully. Not saying it needs to be a lot faster, but sometimes a couple of BPMs could make or break the difference, you know. But I don't know, like Mike was saying, the piano and string kind of thing we put together, I love that so much more. And I'm wondering if like a song like this is just meant to be, you know, like maybe it's not meant to be a rock version or maybe it is. I don't know.
What's interesting, you said the producer. I talked about that at length on TikTok months ago. And it's not a slam to a producer. Sometimes it's just you need a different producer to create a different vibe. And it's nothing about one producer's bad. But I hear you.
Yep.
Well, we can easily say that it definitely wasn't producer's fault because he is now living in Nashville and is traveling all over the world and is paid to write songs. So
he's very good.
He's incredibly talented, and so definitely not slight towards him.
But like Dean said, sometimes it just takes maybe a different person to understand what you're thinking.
Yeah.
How to translate that.
Sure. You know, it's interesting, you know, and totally, because obviously we've all written songs, not at you guys' level. But the thing is that it's funny when I see the responses in the audience, they're like, I love that song. Oh my God, it's like my favorite so far. You know, it's funny because there's a lot of bands like Nirvana when they wrote Smells Like Teen Spirit. Kurt didn't want to really do it.
Right.
But everyone loved it. He's like, I'm not proud of this song. He hated playing it. But
we've talked about this, Dan. There's some videos out there where Butch Vig talks about the process he took them through. And it really is magic, the difference that he made, you know?
Right, right. So there you go. That is Seize the Day. Again, that's on the special edition. I did mention the song Solace. And if anybody hasn't heard it yet, go out, really take it in. The song is just phenomenal. When I post the interview up, I'll put a link to the original one we did because they talked at length about, but I'll just tell it real quick. Why the intro to that song is special is because I remember Tommy was having a bad day. We were on the phone. He's like, you know what? I'm going to share this thing that Greg and him were working on. And all I heard was the opening arpeggio and the swell that comes in from Greg. And I went, oh my God, this is going to be, and that's all there was. It was just this little arpeggio. Can I play the intro to that song, Tommy? Do you care?
Yeah, go for it, please.
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All right. I want people to hear, this is really all I heard was this very beginning before Mike even got it to write lyrics. It was just an idea they had. Who's that guy that did the video? I forgot his name.
Mark Moore.
Oh, Mark.
Mark Moore. What a beautiful video he put together. But yeah, oh my God. So this is the intro. Just listen to the intro to this song. Just imagine this all you hear. I'll play the first part of it. Let me make sure I got everything set up here. Hit mute on everyone. There we go. All right. So this is the intro to Solace right here. After all these years, that intro that you hear, that arpeggio, and then you hear that swell that comes in, that's all there was. And I just remember telling Tommy, like, oh my God, this song's gonna be unbelievable. And then that's what they came out with. Mike got the lyrics, they finished the song. Wow.
Mike, was that the mic was that the microphone you're talking about? Was that the Shure?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, unbelievable. So that's such an incredible song, and it's out. You know, you can get it, stream it, play it, and what an amazing video too that was.
It's kind of funny. I noticed when you pulled that up. If you noticed, it said second cut,
right
on the top of that one. So that's actually not the official music video.
Oh,
years after that video, the original came out. That had a little bit more kind of storytelling with it. Mark Moore, the guy who shot that and directed it, Picture Point Productions. We were just talking where he's a good friend of ours, so we stay in touch with him. And we were talking, and he was like, oh, you know, I've got a whole nother second cut of that video of it's just performance. So I was like, what? He's like, oh yeah, I've always had it. I was like, dude, let's put it out. And he was like, oh, okay. And so yeah, it was kind of funny that one that you just played was actually second cut. It's just performance for the most part.
Don, you weren't supposed to play that one.
No, that's all good. Same song.
Great.
Well, I just wanted to get that opening arpeggio swell because that just think of what grows from that. Just that idea. And then grows into a song just like that.
It's that was amazing. All Greg. Yeah, it was Greg's
beautiful.
Yeah.
So Tommy, I'm a gear geek, so break down the gear. What's your preferred guitar amp?
So, you know, over the years I've kind of simplified it. I'm using almost exclusively, at least on the last couple of things we've put out, Kemper, like a profiling head.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've been hearing a lot of that.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I've used I've used Diesel and, you know, you name it, Hughes and Kettner and all kinds of crazy fun tube driven amps. But when I bought this Kemper, I was hooked. You know, it's unbelievable, the tones, and you can layer multiple tones on top of each other, and it just gives such a crazy, warm, rich tone, like whatever you're going for. In truth, I'm actually not a gearhead by nature. I wish I was more knowledge about it. Maybe I'm just lazy, but I just love the Kemper. I love the simplicity of it, and I love the tone, and I think it just kind of delivers, especially for our kind of music.
Yeah, I geek out on it because the number of amps I've owned over my life is just insane. Because I'm just never happy with any of the tones, so that's why I geek out, because I'm constantly searching, and I eventually did find it. I figured it out, but
what's your preference? What do you like?
When you say simple, it's funny. I actually ended up building my own amp, and what I learned was I hate the tone stack. The tone stacks ruin everything for me. So I actually use my guitar and a very small pedal selection to create the tone. I rip the tone stack out of the amp and I just slam the tube and use it to just amplify. And it was when I built my amp, that's what I learned, is that, okay, I hate the tone stack. That's why all these amps are driving me nuts. So simple.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool though. There's no like magic formula. Everybody has their own preference, what works for them. And it's like, it's not for one person to say, oh, well, you need to use this. This is industry standard. It's like, that's crap. It's whatever works for you, you know?
Well, I would say too, just a neat little information that's kind of reminiscent for me, this conversation. So once again, when we were recording Poetic Rage, one of the things that Justin did was he had it worked where when Tommy was playing, the chord would go in, and he actually had it split into multiple amps. It was at minimum two or three amps. Mm-hmm. And so Tommy could perform the guitar part once, but we would have three to four different tones of amps all recorded at the same time.
Nice.
And then we could go back and then say which one meshes best and works best for certain parts. And I thought that was pretty unique. So it was Diesel, Marshall, Fender. I'm trying to remember if he had an Orange. We had several that we just I'd never seen that before. I was like, well, that's a good idea.
I'm not gonna lie to you, that's one of the reasons that I geeked out on Rickenbacker earlier. Rickenbacker, if you're a purist,
camera went wacky.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea of running the area, running to multiple amps. So that's what hooked me early.
Cool. Nice. Tom Petty would be proud.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that your new song. Oh, by the way, they have an EP also that came out called Rise, and I covered those songs in that previous interview. But again, Moth and the Flame, and the Flame, or To the Flame, Moth and the Flame, right?
And the Flame.
Yeah,
but he's going to a flame.
Yes, that's what always throws me off. I even storyboarded a whole video for it. I remember I went through that whole thing with them. Like I had a whole
video. That was good. That was clever. Yeah.
I want to do it. I actually reached out to Mark and I said, he goes, well, the cost. But like, how can I make it on my own with an iPhone now? See, nowadays, because that was back then, I could probably make a quality video with an iPhone.
100%.
Let's shoot it, man. I'll get like three phones and we'll.
With AI and Premiere Pro, it'll edit it for you and be all done. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on AI? I mean, it's a great tool, but do you have concerns where it's going to the point where full songs are being written with it?
I don't really have an issue with AI. I actually own my own digital marketing firm, and there's tons of AI that's being brought in. And so I actually have lots of times where I'm on podcasts talking about AI. It's hard to say. I think if AI can write the best song in the world, then so be it. But I think ultimately, I don't think it'll ever happen that way. You can always just kind of tell. I mean, I'm not a big pop person anyways. I like all kinds of music, and it seems like AI seems to push towards pop, and that's a little bit easier to replicate. But I think the true rock and roll and the true pure full band sound and writing, I haven't heard anything where AI has been able to truly duplicate that
yet.
Especially live. I'd love to see AI duplicate
live performance.
Although, until Arnold Schwarzenegger shows up and is performing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Get to the job. Well, we do have Chuck Norris here, so we're good. That's Tommy's nickname, if anybody doesn't know. They called him Chuck Norris. How did that happen, by the way? How did you get Chuck Norris?
I know, Chuck, like from Chuck and Nimble, you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't they call you Chuck Norris?
No, I don't know, maybe.
But now they will.
I'm known to Roundhouse.
Yeah, now you got a new nickname. I just gave you one.
But Chuck and Nimble was my like acoustic.
That's what I remember. Maybe it wasn't Chuck. It was just Chuck, maybe. That's what I was remembering. But anyway.
I'll keep it. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. You're Chuck Norris now. All right. Well, let's get into I see Mike disappeared. But the new song is out. And I've already seen people go crazy for it. By the way, Dean, what's interesting is one of the wildest things I ever saw was there's this dude in Russia, like a young kid, and he learned one of their songs, Far From Here, which is a tremendous ballad. And he nailed it all by ear. I was like, this is amazing that some young person in Russia learned Far From Here by you guys. And he did it flawlessly. It just blew me away.
Yeah. Pretty humbling. He played pretty humbling to see. There's people all over the world that actually not just hear your music and listen to it, but like it enough to want to learn it. Y'all can play Forever as Robots. Yes.
You live on,
Mr. Roboto.
We call you Hal. All right, so let's play a little bit of this new song. Like I said, this is another one that, man, immediately kicks in, and it's unbelievable. Just released, everybody. They did a whole countdown and everything, but here we go. And I agree. I'm going to put Richard's comment here. Yeah, Far From Here is a phenomenal song. I mean, my God. So, but here's Left 4 Dead. Let's just play the intro here.
Yeah.
I'm going to pause it right here. Let's keep people in suspense. I want to come back. I don't. Good. We didn't get out yet. Sometimes they'll go copyright. But
we approve.
Yeah. Well, it's right out of the gate. You guys just, Tommy, you just come up with that riff. Is that how this whole thing started?
Yeah, it was a beautiful accident. So I was working on something else that in my head, I was like, oh man, this is going to sound great. And I kept, you know, trying to track it, and it just sounded like garbage. I was like, this is the worst idea I've ever had. So I was about to put the guitar down, and I'm like, no, I'm not going out like this. I'm picked it up. The very next riff I played was that intro. And I was like, okay, there's something here. And then 3 hours later, you know, I'd lose track of time, and I'm like, okay. So I just start kind of coming up with the basic riffs, sharing them with Baker. You know, we collaborate on everything, and just kind of pieced it together. But this song it's pretty crazy. There's actually a double meaning behind the song. If you want to hear it, happy to share it.
Yeah.
How about that? Spoiler alert. If you don't want to know the double meaning, go on mute or, you know, turn your headphones off.
Gotcha.
All right, Tommy, what's the double meaning?
So double meaning, first one is more of a metaphor. Left for dead, meaning, you know, we've been out of the game a little while. We haven't released anything in over 5 years. So, and Mike actually came up, which I thought was really clever, the title Left for Dead. Like, hey, we're the industry thinks we're done, right? We're left for dead. So we came up with that title before we only had a very basic structure of the song. Fast forward about 2 weeks later, my dad is telling me this story of a buddy of his that went down to South America with his girlfriend at the time. And it's super tragic, but he and his girlfriend are driving back from the hotel, the cab driver, they end up getting kidnapped. His girlfriend gets brutally beaten and killed. He gets basically like thrown on the side of the road in the woods, like left for dead. No joke. And somehow crawls back into crawls a couple miles to a village. They rescue him and they bring him back to the States. And like, when I heard this story, I obviously just hearing the story itself is insane. But then I got chills thinking, we already came up with this song title Left for Dead. And it's like, how you don't get more literal than that. Right.
Right.
And then that's when Mike decided to incorporate, if you listen to the second verse, the lyrics are more geared towards literally being left for dead.
Wow.
So, yep.
Wow, that's heavy.
Yeah,
that's pretty neat. Matches the music, which is heavy. How about the double kick from Brent in there?
That's all programmed.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Actually, it's funny, while the song was playing, I was actually thinking about that. I was like, man, Brant really killed it on this song, because when Tommy and I brought it to him, it was we had some stuff that we had envisioned. It was like, this isn't going to be easy. Of course, Brant, you know, after a few times, he's like, you mean like this? Yeah, I like that. we thought this was going to take you a minute, but yeah, he absolutely kills it. Still amazing how incredible he just can just. I mean, that double kick is just killer.
Well, I remember in conversations with Brent, like, he's a big John Bonham guy, so you can hear the power. Like, John Bonham would just he's putting his drumsticks through the drums, right?
Yeah.
And Brent plays very similar style. So that double kick kicks in, and then you had Dave on bass on this. Did Dave play bass?
Yep, sure did.
There's Dave. Now, anybody doesn't know, on TikTok, he's huge. Orange County Rocker.
Yeah,
Orange County Rocker. That guy. Like, I remember going to TikTok when I first started doing it. I'm like, how did he get millions of followers?
It's hilarious, man. I get on TikTok and see all of his videos, and I'm cracking up.
Funny. I mean, dude.
He's got a good ability too. And if you're gonna be somebody like on TikTok or you know any social platform like that and have a lot of people following you, you got a lot of haters as well. And he does really good at turning the hate comments into absolute comedy genius. So a douche canoe is one of them. If you ever come across that one, it's absolutely it's absolutely hilarious. But
anyway. Orange County Rocker. There's a great one where he does this thing where he pulls up to a stoplight and it's always some like Nickelback or Creed.
When the person like, next to you is playing.
And he's doing the whole like you're not gonna sing it, and then he'll just start singing it. And if I'm not mistaken, Scott Stapp duetted it or something. I remember there was one he did, and
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, he's awesome. Good guy too.
He's a great guy.
There was a. I know we're a little over time now. Let me just finish the rest of that part of the song I wanted to play, and then we'll end it. Boy, time flies when we're having fun, right? All right. Mike's like, we're having fun. All right. So just kidding. All right. So here we go. Left for Dead. Let's back it up just a tad here. Yeah, boy, that is Fall of Envy. Left for Dead available now. I'd say the wait was worth it.
Mama, Mike, I do one question for you. So, yeah. Incredibly powerful vocals. Did you come into the game? Like, are you formally trained? Did you come into the game knowing how to take care of your voice for longevity, or are there things you've had to learn along the way?
Man, great question. So, funny story. I'll try to make it short. I had obviously a few other bands, there before Fall of Envy, and, back in the day in Orlando, there was a place called The Station, and we were my band at that time. We were playing, and I got off stage, and at that time I was probably, you know, 19, 20 years old, and, you know, just like any 19 or 20 year old think you can take over the world. And a guy comes up to me, he's like, man, you got a really powerful voice. I was like, thanks, I appreciate it. He's like, you can't sing on key to save your life. And I was like, holy cow, like, who are you? You know, and ended up being a vocal teacher that had done vocal lessons for I can't think of his name now, Janie Lane from Warrant and all of those back days. He actually had tons of platinum albums on his walls that he would play piano on a lot of those old albums. And so I took lessons from him for a little while. And overall, just through time, I don't want to say I learned how to do the screams and stuff without destroying my voice from anybody. I just kind of figured out how to do it. Now, obviously, in the studio, it's a little bit different than live. In the studio, you know, we're saving all that true screaming stuff for very end of the recording session, because I'm just Fall of Envy, Rise of AI. I'm giving it the full on, like, true scream. Like, my vocals aren't gonna, I'm not gonna be able to sing for a couple of days type of thing. But yeah, it's just, you know, I feel like God blessed me with the ability to have some pretty strong chords. But I had to get some training to be able to understand how to control my voice a lot better, and to make sure that I wasn't thinking that I was on key and giving it everything I had to be way off. So
you haven't missed a step, man. I swear your voice is as strong as Poetic Rage days.
That's, I appreciate amazing. It, man. Thank you.
You'll get there one day. Just keep going.
Real quick before I let you all go, just Tommy, I want to, in that part, that in there, that is, that just, how do you get that harmonic in there?
Channeling my inner Tool. That was definitely, you know, Adam, what's the guitarist from Tool, kind of has a lot of those very kind of, not ethereal, what's the word for it? Just very bendy kind of, like...
Atmospheric?
Atmospheric, that's a great, great word for it. Yes. I just wanted, you know, I was thinking of a solo to put over there, and I'm like, I'm just not coming up with anything tasteful because I love the heaviness of that breakdown. So I'm like, all right, why kill that vibe? Just add a little texture to it. And yeah, it was something very simple. It's literally hanging on one note and just kind of bending it up and down.
That worked well.
Sometimes simple is best, you know?
It is.
Less well, is more.
It is great seeing you both again.
You too, my friend.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, thanks for hanging with us.
Appreciate it, guys. Dean.
Thank you, Dean. I got to get to Vero Beach. Gotta get to Vero Beach and hang
out. Come down, man. Come hang out. We got the little studio set up here.
I know. Look at that. We could actually, when we finally write a song, remember we talked about it like 10 years. It would always be like, hey, I'm going to write a song, and then something would come up.
Yep.
One day.
Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you. Guys, you're awesome. Thanks for this, Dean.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody, for watching.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks for hanging, guys. Good night.
Thank you, everyone.
Later, y'all.
Night.
You're awesome.